Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Mike Cosentino over here, and
Gary LeMaster again.
This guy's becoming a regular here. We just keep him under the table. We pull him out on show day.
It's not by my plan. But
I see. Well, we're glad to have you.
Well, especially since we've got a really cheery subject today, the death penalty.
This is a big deal with me. I'm working on my rant right now.
You know, I think they should have let you off easier than that. I know your crimes are multitudinous, but...
Well, we will discuss this at length. And of course, the recent news is the method, you know, the method of choice. What is it? I think it's still 38 states in this country, and we have a federal death penalty statute. So we have 38 states, and the United States has the power to kill its own citizens, otherwise known as a death penalty. Right away, as a bleeding heart liberal, I have a problem with the state having the power to kill its own citizens. But we'll talk about that.
But Mike, just through human history, almost all states have claimed the right to be able to execute.
Well, it would be inhuman
people,
history, wouldn't it?
Yeah. They claim the right to do it. And, the first time the death penalty is written in law was the Code of Hammurabi. And, it wasn't an eye for an eye kind of thing.
It Fun was to say, the, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hammurabi, yeah.
Yeah, Hammurabi.
What did he say?
Oh, I think it was 1800 BC, something like that.
Yeah.
25 different crimes
25
got the death
crimes.
Penalty.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the 1700s in Britain, there were 222 crimes that got the death penalty. In early colonial America, before the U.S. was formed, you could be executed for things like stealing grapes,
yeah,
trading with the Indians. We couldn't make this stuff up, is all his historical record.
Yeah.
So the death penalty has just been used by almost every society in the world for a very, very long time.
That doesn't make it right.
No, it doesn't.
Especially in 2014. If a civilization, anyone that is worthy of the name, because let's call it revenge. Let's call it what it is. We can stop calling it justice. It's got nothing. No death penalty. Hammurabi's or Arizona's has nothing to do with justice. It is about revenge. And I'm starting to see people say, you're right. You're right. It is revenge, but I want to have the ability to seek my revenge and visit my revenge on those people who I believe have committed a capital crime worthy of the death penalty.
I think that's one reason they have a list that got from Wikipedia of methods that are no longer in use. Bastarade, which is throwing somebody to the lions, blowing them from a gun. Apparently, this was considered more compassionate than the old method of killing people. Boiling them in oil, breaking them on a wheel, burning, crucifixion, crushing, disembowelment, drowning, elephant. They have elephant step on a guy.
Step on you.
Throwing them off a cliff, flaying them alive, garroting them, hanging, drawn, and quartered,
flayed.
Live burial, and according to Wikipedia, it's called slow slicing, which was used in China, which we call death by a thousand
cuts.
Yeah. When you say it's about retribution, and I look at the way that people kill people,
right, exactly.
It suggests right off that it is about retribution and not about justice, because the methods are deliberately cruel. The methods are probably crueler burning somebody at the stake than whatever the crime was committed. That didn't seem to change people's minds. They seem to have picked a particularly cruel punishment, and they extended it to a very long, large list. And we call that being draconian method. So
yeah, that was good.
Hammurabi had these like 25 things you could do to get the death penalty. And in Athens, when the dictator Draco took over, he had only the death penalty.
Only crime.
All crimes were punished by the death penalty.
Well, that would
make Sharia law seem kind of tame.
But what's the motive behind that? Draco's becomes a dictator, and every single crime is punishable by death.
Sure.
And what is that? That's just terrorism by the state, right?
Right, exactly. Well, this is all terrorism by the state. I mean, this is allowing the state. Don't forget. I mean, my position is you want to protect society. If the goal of the state is to protect society, we got ways we can do that. We have lots of ways to do that without killing them.
But isn't the crime rate, the murder rate, much lower in states that have the death penalty than don't have the death penalty?
Just the opposite.
Absolutely the opposite. And by the way, a lot of states in the United States have banned the death penalty, outlawed it, going back to the 1800s. A number of them banned it in the 60s. So we have 32 states with the death penalty plus the federal government, and the remaining states have outlawed it. Wisconsin in 1853.
Yeah, when I was doing some research, folks, in the early days, I think the first death penalty abolishment was like in 1843 or something like that, mm-hmm. in Michigan. And a few years later, they reinstated it. And if you look at the pattern, states will abolish the death penalty and then start it up again.
Michigan abolished it again in 1846.
Okay, so they abolished it, they opened it up, had death penalty again, abolished it again, and you see this pattern in Iowa and a whole bunch of other states they can't seem to make up their mind, or the public opinion goes back and forth between the death penalty.
We did it nationally too. We abolished the death penalty in the 70s. And we meaning the Supreme Court of the United States.
Supreme Court in the United States, and it's a famous, I think it's Furman versus Georgia. The Supreme Court looked at the way the death penalty was being applied, and it was so capricious and arbitrary and
still is
out of control that they suspended. They didn't really end the death penalty. They suspended use of it. And then there were a whole series, I think 9 court cases or so, and they decided to set certain rules to make the death penalty less arbitrary and stuff. And then I think in 1976, states rewrote their death penalty laws so that there would be some structure to who got the death penalty. Before that, if you didn't like a guy, he got the death penalty and somebody else didn't. And so that's where the aggravating factors come in. Right, Gary?
There are still people being executed who didn't commit a murder.
State-sponsored killing. We're talking about killing innocent. This is the United States. We're talking about killing innocent people to the tune of over 300, if Gary's statistics are correct.
312 have been exonerated since the modern DNA method.
Yeah. My figure is 140 people since 1973 have been released from death row. These are guys who were sentenced. They were sitting on death row, and then
they've been proved innocent.
Yeah, they weren't just
by some organization or other.
They actually made it to death row. They were very fairly long in the process. Yeah. Yes, they're exonerated. Yeah. Yeah. They were not guilty.
By those lights, and what nobody else talks about is how many people didn't get saved. How many people the state executed that were innocent. Because they had lousy defense, because of any number of reasons. I'm not comfortable
almost
with my country in my name or my state in my name murdering its citizens.
Almost everybody on death row, almost every man, woman on death row,
of which there are more than 3,000,
did not have their own private attorney. They all had public defenders.
I mean,
it's all people who couldn't afford their own attorney.
The state pays for both sides.
That's not
the prosecution and defense. That's a given.
Yes. But the point is that if you have enough money to hire your own attorney and some, OJ type of situation, you get off.
Right.
Or you have a greater chance of getting off. If you have a public defender, no matter how hard they try, these are the people on death row. The folks on death row are people who had public defenders, who didn't have any money, who probably didn't have a lot of social support, economic support, political support.
There are, according to the statistics I found, there are approximately 4% of inmates on death row that are innocent. And that's, you know, we do nothing about that, but we're working to, we're so concerned about the in-person voter fraud that we're passing all sorts of laws in states to get new voter ID. And the statistics for that are the, proven cases of in-person voter fraud amount to 0.00000001%. So we're working like crazy to make sure that a couple of people can't vote improperly, but we'll do nothing about the 4% of the inmates on death row.
So what disturbs you most, Mike?
What disturbs me most is the state's power to kill its own citizens. We have a ways of protecting society. We have, especially in 2014, lots of ways. With life imprisonment is a valid way of protect, especially when you find out that the average life sentence in America is 23 years because jails are not healthy places.
It costs 10 times more.
Cost.
It costs
right.
10 times more to execute someone, to put them on death row and go through the whole process than it does to give them a life sentence.
And critics would argue it's because of the length of the process, but
yes, and that people who don't want to do the death penalty have increased the process.
But even a short process.
If Gary is saying if 4% of the people are innocent, then maybe it should be a very, very long process.
Yeah, I always believe it should be a long process. But it's well over $1 million to execute someone.
11 million and a half, I think, in California.
Oh, wow.
That's the highest figure. It ranges from about, I think, a million in one of the southern states to 11 million in California.
And that's even fast track.
To process the whole death penalty. What about deterrence, Mike, Gary? That's the other argument.
All right.
Death penalty deters crime, deters these murders.
Except for this highly criticized study by a liberal rag, the Washington Post in 2007, there's nothing.
The not so liberal.
Apparently, there is nothing that shows that capital punishment, that death penalty, is a deterrent to capital crimes. Now, it would be a deterrent to corruption crimes. To those people that have ruined tens of thousands of people's lives by taking their houses.
Because it's more calculated crime.
Savings and loans scandals. In those cases, the death penalty would be a deterrent, but it's not a deterrent in the crimes that it's mostly applied
they
to.
They asked police chiefs recently what they thought. And the question was, murderers think about the range of possible punishments before committing homicides.
That's bull.
Well, 24% of the police chiefs agreed with it, and 69% disagreed with it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if they're not convincing the police chiefs, I mean, who are they convincing with the concerns?
And look at the biggest, most sensational crimes in recent history, the mass shootings, Sandy Hook and so on. Those people weren't deterred at all by capital punishment because they were intending to kill themselves.
Yeah, so many of the mass murderers. The recent in Isla Vista where I went to school and UC Santa Barbara, same kind of thing. The guy has no intention of living. It's murder suicide a lot of times.
Well, and these things got
same way with domestic, right, Mike?
What
domestic murders even are murder suicides?
Yeah. Well, but these things. That's why you need a obviously multi-prong approach to this. You need to be on the lookout for mental health issues and get people treatment as soon as you can. In a country that has really shaky mental health investment.
Shaky is being charitable.
Shaky is being charitable. then that state should not have the power to kill people. We need to take the power of the state to kill its own citizens. We can protect each other. We can protect society by not have the power of the state to kill its own citizens. It is not a deterrent. The study from Washington Post 2007 was criticized on lots and lots of bases and some good ones.
National Academy of Sciences, you know, totally picked that article apart.
They've done this study a lot of different ways, folks. For instance, you could say, well, the murder rate is much less in New England with all those giant cities than it is in Texas, California, or something. So it's unfair to compare them. But they compared states side by side with each other who have the same demographics. And it turns out the states that don't have the death penalty have a slightly lower murder rate than states that do. The murder rate has dropped since the 1991. There's all these different stats, folks, but it's dropped about 50% in both states. States that have death penalty or didn't, it's dropped in both. So what's going on? Why would it drop in both? And why would you have the statistic where you don't have death penalty that actually have a lower murder rate?
Well, it's social. I mean, I think, unless you guys have a more specific answer, this is aging population. You know, everybody knows if you can get people to 34 without committing a major or minor crime, the crime rate goes way down. You put that 18 to 34 crowd or the 15 to 34 crowd. This is committing our crimes, including capital crimes.
I was going to make that same point. As the population has gotten older, as a whole, the crime rate overall has gone down.
There's no mystery.
You're going to hear people say, well, we reinstated the death penalty, back in 1976, the states start putting it back in, and the murder rate dropped, the crime rate dropped.
Yeah.
But the crime rate dropped in everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the death penalty is really about my least favorite word, closure. You know, for the families of the victims, it's really, they should name it revenge.
They really should. There is that you're right. My least favorite word. There is nothing accurate about that word closure. First of all, many, many people don't believe that seeing the perpetrator of a crime against your family or your loved one, gives closure. I mean, does it bring him back? I mean, how does it give closure? Revenge, it does give revenge clearly. But here, when I'm saying bleeding heart liberal, I mean bleeding heart liberal. And I'm going to Sister Helen Prejean approach. You remember Sister Helen Prejean was portrayed so very wonderfully by Susan Sarandon in the Sean Penn movie, Dead Man Walking. But she says two things. Number one, you want to be judged by the worst thing in your life. Number one. But number two, the death penalty begins the moment you're given the sentence. You start dying. This is cruel. And Republicans only believe we only have one amendment. There's only one bill of right. And of course, that's the right to keep and bear arms. But there are nine others. And one of those is against cruel and unusual punishment. The death penalty, the moment the death penalty is given, is the moment when you get the sentence. That's when cruel and unusual. Imagine that you're waiting for the state to put you to death every day, every minute, every hour, month after month, year after year. You're waiting to be put to death.
And imagine being innocent.
Yeah. And back in the 70s, there were two justices, Justice Brennan and Marshall, who believed that no matter how carefully it was constructed, how many mitigating factors you had to do to get the death penalty, that it was cruel and unusual punishment, that it was unconstitutional right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
It's hard to imagine that people can accept killing, the chance of killing an innocent person. I mean, I'd rather let 1,000, guilty people have life imprisonment than kill one innocent person.
That used to be the American justice system. You let 10, it was more than that. You let 10 go free before you
Well, you don't
punish.
Have to let them go free, but
I'm just telling you that this was the one of the guiding principles of American justice. You let 10 go free before you imprison one innocent one. Because this is America. Now, somewhere, that they did that kind of crap in the old country. They did that in old Italy and Germany and where everybody came from. That's where they jailed innocent people. But we were more careful than that.
The international situation now is 58 and I think these were from 2011 or 12 stats, 58 nations actively practice capital punishment. Places like Saudi Arabia, the United States.
I was going to say that the vast majority, if you're known by the company you keep,
we're the only first
world. The vast majority of the executions in the world are carried out by Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, China, and the United States.
98 countries have abolished capital punishment.
Yeah, yeah.
7 have abolished it for ordinary crimes, and 35 have abolished it de facto, meaning that death penalty's on the book, but nobody actually gets sentenced to the death penalty because they don't really do it. And you know, all the European countries, you know, from Italy to France, and in fact, the whole European Union has abolished the death penalty. To be a member of it, you have to abolish the death penalty.
This is why we're having trouble getting the drugs to do lethal injections, is because those drugs are made by pharmaceutical companies in Europe that refuse to sell them to the United States now because they know what they're going to be used for and they don't believe in the death penalty.
Right.
So they're now coming up with new experimental cocktails of lethal drugs. And the worst is that they're having people like the most recent botched execution, if you can call it that. The guy did die, but he was tortured for a long period of time. The person administering the drugs punctured the vein all the way through, so the drugs were being pumped into the flesh, not into the circulatory system. So it's, you know, there's all sorts of questions. Now we have states wanting to go back. Utah wants to go back to the firing squad.
Well, hanging was always a choice in Utah. I guess the criminal got to choose.
Firing squad, too.
Yeah.
And it varies from time to time. And when I, again, as I was saying to the guys earlier, when I looked at this pattern, and one of the websites, I believe it's the Death Penalty Information Center, has a little film that shows states abolishing the death penalty and bringing it back and abolishing it. And a lot has to do more with politics. Of course, it always did.
Yeah,
did. Why are you killing somebody because they disagree with you about a religious issue?
Right.
Except that the state or the society wants power and wants to terrify people into
going along. It's a good way of controlling your enemies. Don't tell the Democrats and Republicans about this.
And as you know, the Catholic Church is now against the death penalty after extremely bloody history.
I can say that.
And in fact, when they poll people on opposition to the death penalty, Catholics are one of the highest opposition to the death penalty.
Let's jump on the other side. And this is an often a technique, argument technique.
Yes, sir.
You have a son?
Yes.
Yeah.
What if I had two sons?
I'm just saying, what if somebody murdered him in a heinous way? Let me apply it to myself. I have a daughter, and the argument goes that what if somebody committed a violent crime against my daughter, including murder? Then how would you feel about the death penalty, Mr. Cosentino?
Well, I think one thing to think about is when you have law, you take retributions out of the hand of the individual. Now, you know, if you go to Saudi Arabia and you have this, the family still can decide to execute, have somebody beheaded for a crime against them. But in the whole of most tradition, East and West, is to take the individually injured people out of it. That's why you have juries. That's why you have judges. That's why you have laws, not just decisions based on somebody hurt my family member, killed my family member. I'm going to get back at them. We don't allow that kind of revenge. And most societies in a very, very long time have not allowed that kind of retribution where a one-on-one where, you know, Mike gets to go and murder the guy who murdered his daughter.
So you're saying that's why we have a system of laws is when those kinds of heinous crimes are committed that we don't take the law into our own hands.
If you look at it from an idealistic thing where you're always right and stuff, but the minute you look at the actual practice of this, you get chaos. You get a breakdown of society.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we don't let you decide. I guess the answer is what you would want to do and what society will allow you to do, maybe two different things. Society may look at the crime and say life imprisonment without possibility of parole. They may say life imprisonment. But it's the judge, jury, and the legislatures that get to make the rules of law.
But what this argument is bringing up is just trying to persuade the listener to be in favor of the death penalty. In other words, it's fine and good to argue that the death penalty is cruel and unusual punishment, that the death penalty is not even close to fairly applied, that we have killed innocent people. But what if it happens to you? And I like to think, to answer that question, I like to think that that I don't see my goal in life as being revenge. Would I like to see this person punished that harmed my family? Absolutely. But I believe that I would be perfectly satisfied with putting him away for the rest of his life. Like I said, prisons are not really great places. Something else the right has perpetrated, the lie that has been perpetrated on the American people, that these guys, that prisons are great places where they get food, great food, and watch TV all day, and
if you want to see the truth about it, there's a Frontline documentary that was on PBS a few weeks ago. I'm sure it'll show up again. It's called Solitary Nation.
Yeah,
and
just recently.
And I couldn't watch the whole thing because it takes, you know, they follow prisoners in a solitary confinement unit, and these people, you know, they're all bad people, you know, they've all committed, you know, terrible crimes, but these people are just going crazy, and
that's why a lot of the prison guards unions, a lot of places, and wardens are against both the death penalty and solitary confinement, because they set up situation where the person has absolutely nothing to lose, makes them hard to control and stuff. If they have some privileges, even on death row, if they get out more than an hour a day, they have more to lose. They have some motivation to stay, to be less dehumanized.
They're in a 6 by 10 foot cell, if that, for 23 to 24 hours a day, and with no human contact except what they can yell through the.
I'd be dead in 3 days.
Yeah,
crime was.
I don't think many people could take that. Now again, imagine if you were innocent.
Yeah, exactly.
If you were wrongly convicted.
Exactly.
Well, a lot of people involved in the prison system want more liberal rules on death row because they think it'll create a more stable situation.
Yeah.
And because, remember, you know, most of those guys are probably not going to be executed, or certainly going to be spending years and years and years there. Psychological damage, and Gary was talking about earlier, of solitary confinement is so devastating psychologically that they say that it's very hard to bring somebody back from extended solitary confinement. It's one thing if you're an idealistic dissident in some country, but an ordinary person, solitary just breaks them down completely, and then you've got somebody that you can't release back into the population very easily.
Who's the lady we had on the show? Diane Post. Diane Post. Now she keeps telling us that, you know, prisoners are going to get out. Most of them get out of jail. So I'm sitting here telling you that whatever we're spending on prisons, we need to spend more. And why do I say? Because we need those programs. We need those rehab programs. We need to, because like I said, 83% are going to get out. The rest are going to die there because, once again, my mantra that prisons are not good and healthy places to be. So whatever we're spending, we need to spend more to prepare them to come back and to get them out of solitary confinement. And to forget about death row. Just make death row, we'll just make it a dining room or something. Close up the death rows in the 38 states that we have them, and stop killing, and have the United States of America stop killing its innocent citizens.
Yeah. Almost 100 countries have abolished the death penalty. The United Nations, of course, it's not obligatory on anyone, has voted to oppose the death penalty.
I don't think there's any other first.
They pretty much stopped the death penalty for people under 18. The United States and I think Iran were the two countries that were killing the most people under 18 years of age. And that's Iran had even assigned a statement saying that they wouldn't execute anyone under 18, and they continued to do it. And finally, I think about 2012, there was a little bit of a government change, and they stopped executing people who are not adults. And so even to just get underage people from being executed has been a long, hard slog. And the fact that there's this huge human history scattered across the whole world of capital punishment by all these extraordinarily cruel methods doesn't mean that that's the way that civilization isn't headed some other way.
Let's take an intermission here for this incredibly heavy topic, but one that's been around a long time. I'm going to do a few announcements. We got a Fred Duvall, the next governor of Arizona. We're having quite a party here for him, and this would be June 10th. I'm going to read this list of people who are co-sponsoring: Michael Iskowitz, Alexander Simpson. And if I mispronounce some of these names, you will forgive me. Alan Effelt, Lisa Dahl, Colleen Donnelly, Victoria Vaz, Linda Goldenstein, Dana Hayes, Jim and Rita Ledbetter, Angela Lefevre, Joella Jean Mahoney, Jim and Tim Maloney, Sarah McLean, and Jane Weinberg, Harriet Young. These are the co-sponsors, and they're invited Fred here to Sedona. And it's going to be on Tuesday, June 10th from 6 to 8 p.m., and of course, they want money, but for as little as $50, you can hang out with these folks and at one of the nice Sedona homes. Am I allowed to read the?
You can contact us for more information.
Yeah.
I wouldn't spend.
Yeah, fine. And we have a phone number.
But there's also a free. You can meet Fred at the door office, the newly opened door office.
Oh, when is
the
that?
Same day at 11:30 in the morning.
All right.
So there's
June 10th.
It's not all just fundraiser now. For a Democrat running with, what has he got, 6 Republican opponents, he's going to have to raise money. If you want someone who's going to think about the economic future of Arizona and come up with new ways to diversify our economy, I think Fred is by far the best candidate of the lot, Democrat or Republican.
I do invite you to study the Fred Duvall candidacy. But there is a phone number here if you want to go to the reception, 520-222-7452, or you can email, I guess Jenny is his campaign person. You can do jenny@fred2014.com, jenny@fred2014.com, or 520-222-7452 to go to the party for Fred Duvall after he is at the door office. So you can pay to see him and hang out with the hoi polloi of Sedona.
If ordinary people don't contribute to campaigns, then the campaigns get dominated by billionaires. And you can see this sort of vicious thing going on in the Republican campaign now where the dark money is coming in. And we talked about it attacking Scott Smith for whatever reason. Wherever the money is coming from, we don't know. Dark money is already coming into the Republican.
Brothers.
Yeah, Koch brothers. But we don't have absolute proof.
Speaking of Koch brothers.
It's one of their biggest funded organizations, one of their favorite organizations.
They suspect that there's a moderate conservative in the governor's race, so they're out to get him already. They haven't turned their attention to Fred Duvall.
Speaking
yet.
Of Koch brothers' favorite target, Anchor Patrick, will be at the grand opening of Democrats of the Red Rocks' new office. We have a new office over by Judy's. And we're going to have finger food, and we're going to have drinks, we're going to have desserts. We're going to tell you about some volunteer. They're going to tell you about some volunteer opportunities and get all kinds of election information. So if you're interested, especially in the 2014 election, Sunday, June 8th, 1 to 3, we're talking about right next to Judy's Restaurant in La Posada Pazic, which, of course, is on Soldier's Pass Road, right there on the corner. Anchor Patrick and some other candidates will be there. And you're telling me Fred's going to be there?
No, he's not going to be there.
He's not going to be there.
No, he's coming on the 10th.
Coming on the 10th.
The opening's on the 8th.
Well,
then I don't think we should read the whole thing, but then Ann has a fundraiser that evening.
Oh,
and,
right.
You can read out the contact information there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. this is at the home of Barbara and Michael Luttrell, June 8th, the same night that of the grand opening. Dr. Robert and Jeanette Bell, Richard Dahl, Angela the Fever again, and Jessica Williamson and Steve Williamson are sponsoring this Ann Kirkpatrick visit to Barbara Luttrell's house on the 8th.
So, people have to step up economically, even if you don't have much money to contribute. If we don't contribute, or if you don't have the money to contribute, if you don't go work for candidates and don't pay attention to these contests, what was the famous Spanish painter Goya? What is it? The sleep of reason breeds demons. The sleep of the electorate. The electorate.
That death penalty.
The electorate. Yeah, too many death penalty things. Breeds the control by billionaires.
By the power.
And
of
it's getting worse and worse. So if you're not active, it's not like things are standing still or that's the status quo. It's things are getting worse. If you don't act, however you can do it, then you contribute to it. And same thing goes for Republicans. I mean, if you're a Tea Party guy, get out there and support your Tea Party guys. But don't let all the shots be called behind the scenes by out-of-state multi-billionaires.
Anonymous billionaires. Most cases.
Yeah, you've heard me say this before. I don't get involved in politics. I mean, I think that's so wrong. I think every HOA should be punished for not allowing campaign signs and not allowing political discussions. I think every government building, I don't care who you are, school, church, public safety, police office, fire department, should be open to political events because that's how the country works. To say don't get involved in politics is I get spitting angry when I hear that. And then our kids hear it. So you got.
Why I like sitting across the room.
We go to meetings where we're the youngest folks in the room, and the reason is because we scared the crap out of our kids. We won't let them be involved in politics because somehow we have taught them that that's going to cause trouble. Politics is bad.
I think it's almost as bad. One of the most depressing things, of the last election campaign was canvassing door to door and being told by so many people that they don't vote.
That's right.
But one of the other, truly depressing things is people don't look at the candidates. Those who do vote, many of them don't look at the candidates that they're voting for. They just look for the R or the D.
Presents the guy as.
And they have no idea who they're voting for. They're voting, for somebody of their tribe.
I think
tribal thing has got to end. I really do.
So to sum up on the death penalty, guys, arguments for it or against it, human rights argument against it. You're against it, Mike. Gary?
I'd like to tell a real quick story. I used to work with Tibetans, refugees in Minnesota, and I was talking with one monk who had told me that he had been captured and escaped from a Chinese prison camp, and he was one of four to escape, and all the rest, were kept there. I asked what happened. He said, it happened to those people. He said they all died in the prison camp. And he was talking about his experience with his family and his extended family were all killed because an uncle of his had been a freedom fighter. And so the government went after all of his extended family. And so he goes through this horrible story, and somebody at the end of it asked, there was a group setting, and somebody asked what I thought was an incredibly insensitive and stupid question, was, how does that make you feel about the Chinese? And, by this point, my blood was boiling. I wanted to go hit somebody. And he thought about it for a moment. He says, I have no hard feelings against the Chinese. It's our karma. And he said, I forgive them. It's not their fault. And it was the most humbling experience I've ever experienced. And I think if everyone would just back off and of their emotions and for a bit and think about things like capital punishment, they might have a healthier attitude towards life in general.
I think Mike's point is it worth executing anybody wrongly to have capital punishment when you can put them in jail for life imprisonment? If something turns up and we have DNA information and all these people get released based on DNA information, then they get released. There's a second chance.
Well, that's
why kill people when you have an alternative that makes society safe? It's actually less expensive.
Yep.
And then execution.
Those innocent lives taken are on all of our heads. You know, I mean, seriously, we all are responsible for that.
And those are the families. I'm worried about those families. We're talking about victims' families, and certainly I liked about the movie Dead Man Walking. It did focus on victims' families. It told a nice balanced story, which I'm not trying to tell here. But if you want to focus, I want to focus on the families of the innocent, the accused innocent. I think there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse. I mean, try standing in front of a classroom and accusing a kid wrongly of something. Or if you're any kind of law enforcement person and your life is in danger when you accuse somebody wrongly. So these people have been accused wrongly and they've been executed for it in our names.
All right. Here's a question for you guys. Guy is guilty of murder. He's murdered three people.
Yeah.
You still are against capital punishment, even though we know pretty much to a certainty he confesses I did it.
Put him away.
You still don't want to use capital punishment.
No.
Absolutely. Put him away.
And there's no crime you would use capital punishment for.
None. I'll tell you a quick story.
Got 2.5 minutes.
I know. No, I can't. It's too personal. But there was a crime in my family. And one of our young relatives, my nephew, was killed. And my brother, who I guess has become my non-death penalty hero, this happened in Canada, so the state didn't have the power to kill the individual.
They've abolished capital.
My brother worked with but this gentleman, because of his actions, had such was. But become an alcoholic and had his life was spiraling downhill. My brother worked with this guy for years, and in honor of his son, honor of my nephew that was killed, he said, "Why lose them both?" So that's the kind of that's the kind of action I think that we take. So my brother worked with this guy for years. They got his life back. He stopped drinking. And so in order to honor his son's life, the gentleman hit him with a car and killed him, killed my nephew, yeah. Ran over his head. And my brother worked with this guy for years to prevent him from being losing his life to alcoholism.
We give greater penalties for premeditated murder than we do for a crime of passion. And no murder could be more premeditated than capital punishment.
Exactly. Yeah, we planned this for years. We also have a city council forum. We're going to lighten this up before we leave here. We have a door breakfast. We have a city council forum June 19th. You guys, it's June, the city council race.
Nonpartisan election.
Is there any questions?
So all the candidates are being invited.
Yeah, come. You can find out about the candidates. June 19th at Old Sedona, right?
Yeah, they'll have Old Sedona Bar and Grill. They'll have opening, closing.
Are there contested
statements.
Offices?
Yes.
There are contested.
There
okay.
are, in Sedona, 8 candidates for 3 city council positions,
go.
2 candidates for 1 mayoral position.
Okay, you can find this and all our shows on vvid.org, vvid.org. We have all our podcasts there. You can use this for your death penalty when the relatives come over this summer for the 4th of July. You can have some fun. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.